You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome back. Trey Flynn, Colt Molesky, as always, bring you daily Timberwolves content. I am coming live to you from the blizzard. We have gotten, I'm looking out the window. It's probably, I don't have the official word yet, but it's probably like 6 or 7 inches of snow we've gotten over the last 8 to 12 hours. And it is supposed to be minus like 30 and 40 degrees here over the next couple of days. So good times here from the winter state.
Oh man, that sounds atrocious. I mean, I think the only people happy in Minnesota right now are probably just going to be you, Colin, because you had to do this podcast this morning with me.
But obviously, you know, obviously.
It was a tough weekend, dude. It was like a really, really tough weekend. And you know, for the weather to bite you in the butt like that, I apologize, man. I can't believe you have to go through all that.
I just want to say that I feel like we had some pushback on a lot of our Jazz theories. Like, all of them were right. I mean, Donovan Mitchell, listen to some stats here from this game, because going into it, we both said that the keys to this game were trying to get the Jazz to play sloppy, and that a lot of the offense was going to get kickstarted by Donovan Mitchell, and he was kind of the key. If they wanted to slow him down, if they wanted to slow the Jazz down, then you had to get to Donovan Mitchell, and you had to get him playing bad basketball. And then the best quarter that the Jazz had from the first game on Friday, you had Donovan Mitchell shoot 66%, and he had 11 points. And then in the second game, when the Jazz really went off, it was really a tight game in that first half. And then when they went off in that second half, you had in the third quarter, you had Donovan Mitchell shooting 71%, and he had 13 points. And then he had 3 shots in the fourth quarter, and he shot 100% in the fourth quarter for 9 points. And in both of those games, the Jazz had very low turnovers. And in the second game, especially in the blowout game, they had a really high, they had 30 assists to 9 turnovers. So I feel like all of our theories were correct.
Yeah, to me, there are two separate games we were witnessing here, you know, over Friday night and Sunday. I really feel that the Wolves defense took a backseat to the production of Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert in that second game. In that first game, I really thought, besides having a moral victory in that loss, because I do believe it was a moral victory the way that Minnesota came back in that second half, or that fourth quarter, rather, that first game on Friday night where they lost 106 to 102. Because the way they attempted to come back after being down by 23 points, and then Taj Gibson was ejected, which we can jump into in a second. And then, you know, Towns essentially scoring almost 30 points in the second half. He had 29 points, which is ridiculous. Obviously, he can't fall asleep in the first half like he did against Gobert, but he came back. You know, it's just two different games there for me. Like, I was watching two different Wolves teams, and it was weird because the defense that broke down for Minnesota in the second game, Andrew Wiggins had 35 points and played one of his best games of the season, you know, probably the second best game to his OKC game, and they still couldn't get it done, man. And it was weird because Towns was so aggressive in that second half of that first game that going into that second game at home against the Jazz, I really thought Towns was going to blow up in this one. And he only attempted 10 shots in this game to Jared Bayless's, our third-string point guard, who now looks like a better version of Jeff Teague. There, I said it, Colton. He had 13 shots, 3 more shots in Towns in that second game. So I don't know. It was very odd to see two separate performances from the Timberwolves here where they couldn't really find their groove. And I'm not really sure what the answer was besides trying to, how you've said in the past, be aggressive with Mitchell and not let Rudy Gobert thrash Towns in the post. But it was weird because Mitchell really was able to be the main facilitator. And I know we've talked about their assist issues, and it seemed like Ricky Rubio took a backseat and Mitchell just became the primary facilitator and scorer over the past two games.
Here's the other thing, too, though, when you're watching, and I want to get to the foul stuff that you mentioned and brushed on with Taj and everything, but when you watch the Timberwolves and they don't have a guy like Robert Covington or Jimmy Butler anymore, kind of a primary defender you throw on a guy like Donovan Mitchell, the move really has to be schematically. And the move has to be, you know what? We don't have the defender to put on Donovan Mitchell right now, because Josh Okogie, while he's had his moments, was not playing very well defensively this weekend. And Andrew Wiggins was going off offensively, but just didn't have that defensive push in this weekend to really lock down Donovan Mitchell. When you're Saunders and you see that, there's got to be a moment where you just commit to really trying to throw off Donovan Mitchell. And if Crowder and Joe Ingles beat you, then, and Kyle Korver, then you know what, so be it. But don't let the formula be kind of simple and then not go for it. You have to do a lot of stuff where you're trapping him at the top of the key right away, or you're doubling him when he drives in, or tripling him. I know it's going to leave guys open, but I feel like, I mean, it's not the Golden State Warriors. You're not leaving Klay Thompson open in the corner. Yes, these are good NBA players, and this is a playoff caliber team, but this also is a team where if you can get them to play sloppy and you can get Donovan Mitchell to shoot. I mean, when the Timberwolves came back in this game, it was because Donovan Mitchell was not playing well. I mean, other factors were there, but Donovan Mitchell did not play well in that big comeback for the Timberwolves either. And so you've got to try and do some things schematically when you don't have that one guy you can just throw on an offensive piece like Donovan Mitchell.
Well, to me, it wasn't even just the threes. I mean, they hit 13 threes in their first in our first game against the Jazz on Friday, and then they hit 15 threes in the second game against Utah and on Sunday night. So Utah went 13 on Friday and then 15 on Sunday, and that's a lot of threes in a game. But like, it was just the way they did it. It was so it was such a crusher because they would dribble drive after a pick and roll, and they would kick out to a wide open 3-point shooter. And, you know, sometimes it happened to be one of the best 3-point shooters of all time in Kyle Korver. Other times it happened to be Joe Ingles or Jay Crowder, and they would nail around 30 to 35% of those. So you're right, we're not dealing with the best 3-point shooters in the world, but it was just the ease that they were able to do that with, which was ridiculous. Like, the reason why we only lost by 4 points in that Friday night game was because, like you said, they were aggressive with Mitchell. They were pressing down on him in the defense after the pick and rolls, and they wouldn't let his dribble drives get crazy there. And he ended up with 11 assists and 7 rebounds off of his 24 points, which is a fantastic stat line. But he was 7 of 24, Colton. Like, you weren't wrong there. Like, it was a good call. Like, it's just that when you have other guys being able to hit shots in the corner there in the fourth quarter, and other guys having blemishes on defense in the fourth quarter, and that seems to be what happened to Minnesota in both these games. They had some severe blemishes on defense. Like, there are wide open shots being taken where defensive players, whether it's Josh Okogie or even Andrew Wiggins, crashing on the pick and rolls to try to play help defense way too quickly, like way too quickly. And I've read a couple things here where their Wolves media are trying to argue that this is more of a philosophical disagreement than a player personnel issue, where Saunders really wants them to play strong help defense off of these dribble drive pick and rolls. And I agree that playing hardcore defense against a duo such as Mitchell and Gobert can work theoretically. I think it's just because Minnesota was so hampered with injuries that they just couldn't pull away these games. Like how you just said, Robert Covington, like they were using guys as defenders to try to get Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert off their games that weren't really the intended starters for that system. Like, you can't really use Jared Bayless as your main guy to throw off Donovan Mitchell when he's going off a pick and roll with Rudy Gobert. It's just not the best idea, even though Bayless is playing very well on the offensive end. So it just, to me, it just seemed like the injuries were too much for Minnesota. And they played a playoff team. Like I said in the past podcast, the Jazz are a good basketball team. Like, and Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert are two of the top 30 players in this league. I don't have any problem with Utah winning both these games because of the injuries Minnesota has. However, the fouls in the first game were atrocious by the referees on both sides. But I really think against Minnesota, it was kind of ludicrous, some of those calls. And then in the second game, I could not believe the lack of production from Townsend in the second half. It really threw me off, threw me through a loop, because that's just not a superstar performance, even though he had a solid stat line, even if Wiggins was blowing it up.
Yeah, you want him to really own those games. And he just it sometimes feels like guys like LaMarcus Aldridge, Rudy Gobert can get the better of him sometimes, which is unfortunate. We're going to take a quick break for some sponsors, then we're going to get to the fouling, we're going to get to Point Terrell, and we're going to get to where we go from here. But first, let's get to some sponsors. Cole Molesky, Trey Flynn, breaking down everything from the weekend, a lot of Jazz talk, and I you mentioned the fouls before we went to break. I just want to say that of all the unicorns in the NBA, I feel like Towns gets the least respect.
Ooh, I like this take. I'm going to say it is Towns that gets the least respect, but I'll say when Kristaps Porzingis comes back, even though he's an MSG and he gets a lot of love in New York, I think people are kind of forgetting how great he was before that injury. And I hope he comes back just as good, but it's really hard to tell.
I mean, like, from the referees. I think that Towns gets the least respect from the referees, just as far as getting calls, as far as how to officiate him. Because I get that unicorns are really hard to officiate when they play so much inside-out basketball. But I feel like when I watch guys like Anthony Davis or guys like Porzingis or Giannis, and then I compare that to Towns, I hate to blame refs for games, and I hate to blame just have a take that refs aren't doing a good job. But if you watch Towns this season, he either does not get calls or he gets called so harshly, and then he gets to him and he gets into fights with refs. They tee him up really quick now. It's like a Rajon Rondo tee up fast situation, and I don't like any of it.
Yeah, I hear you, and I think it more has to do with the lack of savvy play from Towns sometimes, because he kind of plays like, he just got on a basketball court sometimes. He's a little flimsy at times, which I think the referees, it's easy for them to call fouls on guys like him. Kind of reminds me a little bit of like Andre Drummond. He's really like, he kind of flails his arms a lot. And so it's easy for refs to call those plays, and more veteran centers, whether it's Al Horford or Aldridge, whoever, they can kind of get away with things, or even Anthony Davis, who's just, you know, he gets away with things just because the NBA loves him, you know, because he's like a superstar and he's been in the league for longer and he's been in the MVP race for a while now. But like when it comes to Towns, I really think it'll be in the next few years whether he gets to dictate the flow of a game based on fouls. I think that just because of his personality, it's almost like the antithesis to DeMarcus Cousins, right? Like Cousins didn't get a lot of calls in Sacramento. He was obviously going to be a superstar, and he would complain about that a lot. Towns is the opposite. He has almost no personality on the court when it comes to these things, and he flails, and he seems like a nice guy, and he'll ask questions about why he gets fouled, and he might even get fouled because of that, or extra calls because of that, because he's just asking like questions to the referees, and they get angry about it. So I feel like they have two different personalities there, but they're getting a lot of foul calls, because I'm sure if you compare the fouls from their early careers, it's very similar, which is very odd to the way that this is being handled. So I definitely agree there's something there, especially with the five fouls in the first game. But it's also, it's a shout-out to Rudy Gobert and his ability to kind of throw off the other center when he's obviously playing one of the best offensive players in the league. Because even though Gobert in that first game against Towns, who had 33, Gobert finished with 18, 16, 4 blocks, and 2 steals, which is a very nice stat line, and only 2 fouls, which is saying a lot for the lack of kind of savvy play, as I said before, from Towns to try to get fouls on Gobert to get him out of that game. Gobert kind of used his IQ in this one to try to force Towns out of there, which was an interesting move by the Jazz front coaching staff there.
Yeah, I haven't liked the way he's been officiated. And the other thing, too, is that, I mean, DeMarcus Cousins was an asshole, and he still is an asshole. Yeah. And yeah. So I don't know how you officiate those two guys the same, but you're right. That's a great comparison. They really are officiated pretty much the same. And I do think there is some games where this is honestly kind of taking effect. I really do, and I don't like saying that. I don't like accusing officials of doing a bad job, and I don't like breaking down a game and simplifying it to, hey, calls are affecting the game. But it really does feel like officiating, it kind of comes down to which crew you get as far as how many minutes Towns is going to play on a given night.
Yes, and I will say that, you know, even though it was bad officiating, I have 2 stat lines from that first game that really jump off the page that are kind of simple, like it's not really anything advanced. But Jared Bayless 4-14 from the field. Okay. And he took some wild shots in this game at the end of the game, but luckily hit a really key three at the end. I don't like that the ball's in his hands the last minute of that game when it was really a clutch time down by two. And then Andrew Wiggins, 8-26, the worst shooting performance he's had since his 0-for-whatever, where he had 0% from the field. He had 30.8% from the field and 25% from three and 57% from the free throw line. Just disgusting play from Wiggins and five turnovers. It was really bad. And then that fourth quarter in the bottom 2 minutes to be playing like that for both of them, I don't really put a lot of pressure on Bayless since he's coming to the offense brand new. But that Wiggins performance was just atrocious. And maybe Minnesota didn't really deserve to win this one at the end there, even with the foul trouble with Towns, just because of all the workload they gave to Wiggins in this one. But you also, it's weird because you can't blame them, because going to this Jazz game, you can't blame them too much at least, because going to this Jazz game, that first one Friday night, the Jazz knew that essentially the game plan was to stop Towns and stop Wiggins, and everybody else would not do anything, which is essentially what happened. Nobody else did anything. The only other guy to score over 10 points was Bayless with 11, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely, you already brought it up, they were really hampered by injuries. That said, there's literally no other team, I think, in the NBA I would rather not have a final play drawn up by or executed than the Timberwolves.
Yeah, it's so bad. Like you said, it's in the past couple pods, there's not a go-to guy at the end there.
And it really, it can't always, because I don't think that the move is to set up like a center with a three-point shot all the time. But if you're down by two, or even if the math works out where you can, like, you want to get two and then foul and then hope that they miss one and get another quick bucket, like, it's got to be Towns, right? It's just always got to be Towns unless you absolutely need a three.
Yeah, Colin, can you remind me real quick? Was it Gorgui Dieng that took a three at the end of that first Jazz game?
I'm going to go to the play-by-play here and make sure, because I want to get the right guy. And I get it. They lost by four. But it just can't be some of these guys that are finishing out the games is my point.
No, I mean, it's a fine take. I completely agree with it. I just was so flustered at the end of that game. I remember, like, just turning off the TV and be like, I'm done with this. Like, I even though it's a moral victory with the comeback and everything, how do you have a moral victory comeback like that from being down 29 points and Taj Gibson is ejected, and essentially it's like everyone's coming back together even though they have a bunch of hurt players, and then I believe it's like Jang or whomever, if it was Bayless, shooting a three at the end of that one. It was just really a terrible watch right there.
I would like to also bring up, before we get to our second break, point Jared Terrell is probably one of my favorite things from the weekend.
Yeah, man, he was fun. I like that. The Bayless Terrell package we have going is interesting. And I thought it was really, kind of like a nuanced take that I saw the Point Wiggins thing over the weekend too. Like, there was like a Dan Moore wrote for something for ESPN where he was trying to, you know, essentially push for this Point Wiggins movement, which I was like, sure, whatever gets Andrew Wiggins going, totally fine with it. Then I watch film on Jared Terrell. I'm like, I kind of like that more. Let's keep Wiggins, you know, at the shooting guard, small forward, give him some more shots, maybe give him some more facilitating, but let's keep him shooting the ball. Because I kind of like that Terrell move in the backcourt there and off the bench. I don't mind it.
I'm telling you, man, I love him, and he is one of my guys. He's in my stable of guys. You know, you've been doing this for a little while. You just have guys that you stick to and you stick to your guns about. He's one of my guys. Also, for that, I'm pulling up the play-by-play of this game that happened on Friday, and the final sequence. Here we go, people. I know this is probably great. This is great content right here. But
I would have the drum roll ready in a second. But
the final sequence was, they bring it in, and then Wiggins takes that. Oh yeah, that's right. Wiggins takes that weird fadeaway shot off the elbow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it's not Bayless, but it also, this is the thing too, is that if you're going to have a guy shoot outside, like, could we figure out a way to screen for him or something, or get him coming off a screen? Like, I feel like the Boston Celtics run that double screen off the top of the key for a Kyrie shot off the elbow. like
a lot
50% of the time to finish out, or even if they're like coming out of a timeout or something, like how is it really that hard to just set something like that up?
You would think not, but is there a team that does more ISO ball, you know, at any point on the court? Like, I'll see them throw a ball to like Taj Gibson in the mid range, and he'll just start posting up, and then you see zero movement from the rest of the players. Like, there's not any picks happening. I think the first pick and three that I saw in a while was Gorky Chang, of all people, picked for Luol Deng in the right corner to hit a three last night. And I was like, okay, can we just get more of those? Like, can we get some Towns pick and threes from Wiggins? Like, that would be pretty sweet. Like, you would think that just, like, those kind of small plays would be helpful. Or even if it's just, like, a double screen once in a while. Like, I feel like I do not see much movement on this Wolves team. So, I don't know. I guess I'll just, like, call Doris Burke about it and we can just vent. It's kind of tough.
Well, like, before that even, you had the Tolliver, the deep Tolliver three with 3.6 seconds left.
That's what I was thinking about. I think that's what I think it was a fine shot, but I think it was like a really long one, like close to 30 feet or something like that. And I was totally thrown off. I was like, is that really who we're going to give the last shot to? But, oh, well, I mean, like I said, we were hampered with injuries. So it is what it is at the end of that one.
Yeah, well, I don't want to complain too much because we have Jared Terrell in our lives, who is going to play point guard for the Timberwolves. So
you heard it here first, folks. Colton's two guys, De'Anthony Melton and Jared Terrell. He's going to die on that hill. He loves those guys.
Absolutely, and for forever and always. Just like with Deion Waiters, I'm on the island. We're going to take another break for some sponsors, and we're going to talk about where we are right now with the Timberwolves. First, some sponsors. So it felt like the proper way to finish out the show was decide where are we with the Timberwolves this season? Where do we go moving forward? I mean, what do we think of this team? Is it time to chalk this season up to injuries and kind of a lost cause almost when you can't get healthy? Is there still a push to be made? What do we do with this team now? What do we do with this team, Trey?
Well, it's tough, right? And, you know, I don't want to go on a huge monologue here, but essentially, you know, I love my monologue, so I might just go on that. But essentially, the Timberwolves are like treading basketball purgatory here, and they are treading lightly. They're walking a fine line, and they're not really sure what to do. And it's really tough to be a middling team that isn't necessarily built for a tank like the Phoenix Suns or the Atlantic Hawks. And it's also very frustrating to not be a team built to make the playoffs as a top five seed. So usually these kind of teams are sitting between the 6th and 12th seed, where they're all kind of fighting to get in one of those spots, even mid to end season. And let's be honest here, Colton, even though the Timberwolves made the playoffs last year, they won their first playoff game in 14 years against Houston, for better or worse, in that terrible series. But, you know, they made the playoffs because of a late push performance against the Denver Nuggets in the last game of the season. And I'm not ready to call it quits and give it up with the Wolves season this year, because I don't really like the idea of a middling team trying to just kind of like give up here with injuries. They're four games back from the eighth seed. They need to push through. And just like we saw Victor Oladipo with injuries with Indiana, they could possibly drop out of the Eastern playoffs. I'm never going to like wish for an injury, of course, like that's obvious. But like the way that the NBA has been working this year in the past few years with these crazy knee injuries, I would just, you know, anything can happen is my point. Like any of these Western teams could have one injury away or two injuries away, or just a few losses here and there, a coach firing, something, any kind of dramatic, internal issues that would just bring some of these teams back. It could even be Utah for all that, you know, for all it matters. It could be LA Clippers or San Antonio Spurs. There's a few teams that it could be. So I wouldn't necessarily give up here, because I don't think there's much room to fall behind if you're Minnesota. Like, the teams behind them are Dallas and New Orleans, and they could fall behind those two teams, but then they would be the seventh or eighth worst team in the league, which getting a seventh or eighth pick in this draft, that'd be fun, and that'd be great. But I'm not really sure that that's going to help the culture and foundation that was kind of built last season to make the gritty and grind of this team to make the playoffs start anew. And I don't think it would be necessarily a good idea. So, again, we're in a tough situation. Being a middling organization is not always the easiest way to make the playoffs. And also firing your head coach midseason probably isn't the best idea for a winning organization. So we're kind of taking the steps in the losing direction here. I just would not give this up. I would not give this season up. They, you know, they were on a good roll there before these two losses in a row, right? I think it was, let's see here. We were on a three-game winning streak, those two losses in a row, and now we have Memphis for two of the next three games. You know, and Memphis is one of those teams that is deciding to tank, and they want to trade Marc Gasol and Mike Conley, and they're ready to blow it up. Actually, Colin, quick question after whatever you're going to say to answer this. I was thinking about this last night, and this could be an idea for another pod. Do you see the Memphis Grizzlies with Marc Gasol and Mike Conley kind of being the time machine future of Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns in the way that Grizzlies team is run?
That's kind of a depressing thought to finish out on. I would like to say, first of all, I feel like the Timberwolves really are the Charlotte Hornets of the West. Like they're a team where they're going to be a fringe team for the playoffs, and there's guys on the roster that you really love, but there's never a time where you really love the team. And that's kind of, it just feels like they're stuck in that area, and that's never going to lead to a crazy great draft pick, and it's also never going to lead to a crazy hopeful playoff run. And it's a bummer of a spot to be in. It really is.
Is Andrew Wiggins Nicholas Batum in this game? Is he Nick Batum in this comparison here?
No comment.
Oh gosh.
As far as your point, is the Wiggins Towns going to be the Gasol Conley? I don't know. I feel like I'd rather have Conley than Wiggins.
Oh no! Are we gonna make a trade with Memphis? Is this happening, Colton? Are we gonna switch? Are we gonna get a Conley then Conley Towns pick and roll here?
You know what? I love Conley, and I feel like if you take even like one of his injuries away, he's in the conversation for one of the better point guards in the last 20 years of the NBA. And he's just been hampered by a lot of, especially knee injuries, but he is such a great two-way guard, and he is really good at knowing exactly what kind of night he's having, whether he's going to distribute a ton or whether he's going to knock down a ton of shots. He's really, over the last couple of years, developed a three-point shot. Great defensive guard. And you know what? At this point, I just am a big supporter of throwing out multiple point guards in a lineup. I don't know. There's not a ton of point guard situations where it doesn't. I mean, obviously, when you have John Wall on your team, like, you don't want to throw out multiple point guards because you don't even want to throw out John Wall. But if you're working with other point guards than John Wall, I think that there's not a ton of scenarios where throwing out a couple point guards just doesn't work. And so if you have a team with Derrick Rose, who needs more rest, Jeff Teague, who Trey doesn't want to see play. I mean, they've got Tyus Jones, Jared Bayless, who maybe has been just doing more with the minutes than anybody could have expected. But if you're throwing Mike Conley in there, I know people would say that there's no way they need another point guard. But if you're throwing out like Derrick Rose and Conley together, I don't know how that's not working.
No, I love Conley. You know, if I could have wished for a couple players to kind of change their initial team they went to at the beginning of their career, I would think the first two guys I think of, like, off the bat are Mike Conley and Goran Dragic. I think if those two players played for, like, a San Antonio Spurs organization at the beginning of their career, some team to that extent, and in the Eastern Conference and not in the West, because the West has just been such a headache in the past 10 to 15 years, those two players I think could have gotten to the 3 to 5 All-Star teams, and especially Conley. Like, I think he had, a lot of underrated talent there before the injuries, a lot like Rudy Gay as well, which, funnily enough, Rudy Gay is playing for San Antonio now. But, like, I think that those two or three players there, I think, like, they all could have done a lot if they were, you know, primarily stuck in the Eastern Conference, which I think is a very big deal that'll go underrated in the future. But, yeah, I do think even with the point guard, the bulk of point guards that Minnesota has right now, I think that a Mike Conley move would be a very, very good move. I think Towns, he needs, you know, you can see from the Clint Capellas of the world, or the Rudy Goberts, or even the Anthony Davis, and now it's Drew Holiday. A lot of these really good fives, or Nikola Jokic, even with Jamal Murray, a lot of these good fives need somebody that's at that facilitating position. And even though Towns didn't play fantastic with Jimmy Butler always last year, Butler wasn't a true facilitator. And in a way, Mitchell looks like a more of a nuanced point guard than Jimmy Butler was. So I think this team does need a better point guard. That's a young, fresh point guard. And it could just be Tyus Jones, and he could be sitting on our lap right now, or just not giving enough minutes. But that'll just get me on the Jeff Teague trade run, so I'm just not going to go there. But I do like this idea of a Conley Towns duo, a pairing right there. But yeah, I like that one.
You brought it up, so I'm going to go down the rabbit hole just a little bit further. If we're talking about NBA players, and if you could redraft them just to put them in a different spot so that they maybe have a different career trajectory. I mean, Lamar Odom, I think, is the number one. Get him out of L.A., put him in a small market team, put him in, like, Charlotte or Oklahoma. Keep him away from a lot of the problems and a lot of the spotlight that seemed to be an issue across his career. Maybe he lasts a lot longer.
I like that one a lot. I like Lamar Odom. It's hard to give a good take right off the top with this one. I'm actually going to stick with a player that you've already kind of brought up, on the team that you've already brought up. I'm going to go with Kemba Walker. I think if Kemba was on a different, a more consistent franchise, like the way people love Damian Lillard in Portland, and that's just kind of his like place now. Like, I don't think he wants to lead the Trailblazers. He wants to kind of like be the Dirk Nowitzki in Portland and Trailblazers jersey. And Kemba's kind of the same way in Charlotte, but that organization is just terrible. Like, they had like six centers last year at one point. Like, they do not know what they're doing in that front office. I don't think they hired a GM for like a month there. So, like, if Kemba was on any consistent organization, it could even be the Atlanta Hawks. Like, I think he would have just been already a 4 or 5-time All-Star. He's had some really good years over the past 5 seasons in his short career. He's only 26 or 27 years old. And a guy that I'm kind of scared that'll fall into that trap of Kemba Walker too is Devin Booker. And we know from playing the Suns this year, Booker is turning into something different this season. He's getting a lot more responsibility, and he doesn't look just like a Bradley Beal. I mean, former Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal and Devin Booker kind of look similar now that John Wall's hurt. They're both facilitating. They're both shooting a lot. And I really think if Booker gets stuck in Phoenix for too long, it'll be the Kemba Walker syndrome, and they both won't be for good organizations, and it won't look good for them in the future.
Those are both good calls. Also, Bradley Beal, another one of my guys that I ride or die for. Also, turns out MJ, not super good at running a team. Crazy.
Who would have guessed that?
Who would have thought? Maybe all the Bulls players. But
all the Bulls players who got choked out were like, Michael, I don't know if running an organization would be the best idea. Because Jordan's out there like with a bottle of whiskey asking Kemba Walker to play one-on-one on like Wednesday nights on the off days. Yeah. Just like, come on, Kemba, let's do this. Come on.
And he's hitting Malik Monk, and Bulls players are rubbing their necks and like, yeah, you know what? We could have told you about this. We could have warned you.
Could you imagine Andrew Wiggins under the mentorship of Michael Jordan for full time?
And I think he just walks just into the ocean. Just kind of like that scene. Kind of like that scene from Riddick when the guy just walks into the burning fire, and he just keeps walking, like falls and gets up. I feel like the surf would like crash Wiggins down, and he gets up and keeps walking out into the ocean. It's that kind of scenario.
I definitely pictured a similar thing, except I was picturing Anakin Skywalker just cut in half with a lightsaber, asking for help from Michael Jordan. The scenario is Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan being like, nah. You weren't the guy.
No, man. This ain't it. All right. I hope that everybody is sticking with us through this rabbit hole. Thank you for indulging us. And thank you, everyone, for listening to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.